Now, the challenge might be to stay awake after that awesome meal, but I guarantee you that we have such an amazing speaker that that's not going to be a problem. I just had the honor of meeting Marissa Bell about an hour or so ago when she arrived, and we're very happy to have Marissa Bell Governor as our special speaker today. She's originally from Venezuela and is a member of Albany Mennonite Church. She's a registered nurse, has several master's degrees, and is a certified nurse midwife, as well as a teacher, a facilitator, a writer, a mentor, and a storyteller. In addition to Venezuela and the U.S., she has worked in Indonesia, Afghanistan, Ghana, Bangladesh, India, and Haiti. That pretty much covers the globe. There's much more that we could talk about in introducing her, but that's what she's going to do. She's going to tell us some of her story, sort of the who, the what, and the where of her life. So, Marissa Bell, we are delighted to have you here, and we're really looking forward to what you have to share with us.
Wow. Thank you so much for making the effort to even be here. I think the Historical Society is a fascinating subject. I think it's extremely important. And I'm glad that this is something that's happening in Oregon. I'm overwhelmed that I should be invited to speak here, because I don't know that I'm Mennonite. And I have to say that because my son said, you were raised as a Catholic mother, you can never be anything else. I'm Mennonite. And you can come to my church. So let me tell you about myself. In thinking of what to say here, I asked several members of my church, and they all said, tell a story. You tell great stories. But there are millions of those, I suspect. And so I thought, what could be useful? And so I've decided to tell you a little bit about myself and how I ended up in the Mennonite Church. First of all, the first thing I have to tell you is that the title of this talk is incorrect. It's the M people, not the M word. So, I was born in Venezuela. My parents were Venezuelan. My mother's background is Sephardic Jew. And my father's background is black, from Africa. But his grandmother was not a slave. She was a brilliant woman, and so she never was in slavery, but I'm sure that all those who came before had been slaves. My father's background is Dutch. And I wonder if not Mennonite somehow. So here we go. I was born in Venezuela, and my father actually, to get rid of that bit of information, my father was actually the translator for seven presidents. He was actually the translator for John F. Kennedy, for Mother Teresa, and for an incredible number of people. He was best friends with the greatest musicians of his time. I remember when Pablo Casals, the greatest cellist that we had in the last century, when he died, people sent my father condolences that he had lost his good friend. So my father was really somebody, and he loved to teach. And so he was always teaching us. And I learned many things from the lessons that he taught. And one of them was, he said, child of God, you embroider your speech a bit too much. Keep it short. So, when I was 3 years old, we moved to the United States, and I lived in New York. My mother was now a single parent, raised by a Victorian woman. And so her mother and her father were very strict people. They knew exactly how things were done, and that's how they had to be done. There was no question. My mother had the same attitude. There was a way to live life, and this is how it had to be done. There weren't questions. We didn't argue with my mother or anything like that. We knew how hard it was. I think we knew. After I became a parent, I realized how hard it was. And so my mother said, since I have to work all day long in this country, you have some options of where you can be when I'm not home. And that was, you could be at school, you could be at the library, you could be at the park, or you could be at a museum. That was it. You didn't go to friends' houses or anything like that. When she was home, you were welcome to invite people to the house. But other than that, we weren't like bouncing around people's houses and doing what we pleased. And so, I've read about so many people who were ill, and then they had to spend time, great writers, great artists, musicians, whatever, who spent periods of time in their life, saints in the Catholic Church, who spent times in their life where they were ill. And so they just had to sit on a bed and read. Well, I was perfectly able, but I had to read, because that was one of the few places I could be in after school. So I attended public school until sixth grade, and then my mother decided that I needed some churching, I guess. Although, this is a kind of interesting story. In my father's background, there's actually a relationship with a woman who's recently been made a saint in the Catholic Church. So there was a lot of churching going there. But my mother decided that she wanted me in an environment where that's what I had discussed most of the time. Not in school, remember? Library, the museum, cost money on the bus. So it was really the library. And of course, there was no question but that your homework was always done. So one day I was at the library, and we had a tiny little library. And I picked up a book, and I thought it was rather interesting. It was a well-worn book. And in that book, I read the following. Oh, did I tell you I was a smart little kid, too? So, for true and evangelical faith is of such a nature that it cannot lie dormant, but manifests itself in all righteousness and works of love. It dies unto flesh and blood, destroys all forbidden lusts and desires, cordially seeks, serves, and fears God, clothes the naked, feeds the hungry, consoles the afflicted, shelters the miserable, aids and consoles all the oppressed, returns good for evil, serves those that injure it, prays for those that persecute it, teaches, admonishes, and reproves with the word of the Lord, seeks that which is lost, binds up that which is wounded, heals that which is diseased, and saves that which is sound. The persecution, suffering, and anxiety which befalls it for the sake of the truth of the Lord is to be a glorious joy and consolation. Do you know who wrote that?
Mm-hmm. Sure. We do.
Menno Simons. So I tell my brother this stuff. He said, look at this great stuff in this book. Now, what a book about Mennonites was doing in a little tiny library in New York so many years ago, because I'm a lot older than you think. I don't know. So I tell my brother this, and he says, terrible. What are you reading about evangelical people? So I said, well, that's not a bad thing, is it? And he said, well, okay, if we can get past the evangelical stuff. Now, my brother was really smart. He was 2 years older than me, so he knew the world. So he said, the evangelical thing, you know, we're not holy rollers in our house. I didn't know what that was, so I didn't pay any attention to it. Just like the time we baked pies, we didn't know what something like Crisco or something was. So my brother said, it's not important. Let's bake the pie without it. We did. It was stone. So anyway, he said, this evangelical, okay, so let's get past the evangelical faith. I said, but true faith is a good thing. Couldn't we just talk about that without them? He said, what are you reading this stuff for? There's some interesting other books. And I said, no, but doesn't this make sense that the purpose in life is to serve? And he said, yeah. I said, but I don't feel they're doing that at our church. So he said, you're going to get into trouble for this stuff. So I went back several times and read other sections of this book. These people knew their stuff. I was sure of it. And so soon after, in sixth grade, I had Mrs. Silverman. She had the smart students in the school. And she said, write a story about a group of people. Well, darn it, I knew exactly what to do. I was going to write about these M people. But I was young, and I forgot the word, the name. So I said, I want to write about a group of people. And they were very brave, but they really believed in service. And she said, those are Methodists. So I said, well, she was a Jew, so she didn't really know these things either. So she said, there's Methodists. I said, no, the Methodists are down the street. I know them. And she said, oh, yes, it's the Mormons. So I said, okay, Mormons. So I went to the library and I looked up the Mormons and I came back and I said, this is definitely not the people. this is wrong. And she said, look, Governor, I've had it with you. You write it about the Mormons. So, okay, so I wrote a report on the Mormons. And I enjoyed it. It was good. I went back to find my book and it was gone. In fact, after so many years, I wonder if the book wasn't something that somebody had intentionally left there. Because I didn't remember any call number or anything like that on this book. And the book disappeared. And I lost the M people. Because I never found out who they were. So the years went by, but there was the seed now of some searching, some understanding that I had reached, but had lost, but I knew it was there. Life went on, and years later, I had a neighbor by the last name of Yost, and she said to me, I have a cookbook that you would like to read. So I said, cookbooks? I don't like read cookbooks. She said, you would read this cookbook. It's worthy of reading. And she gave me More with Less. More with Less. This was 36, 38 years ago. So she gave me this book and she said, I'll even give it to you because I think this is your kind of thing. A cookbook? Okay. But she did say I should read it, so I started reading it. It didn't take many pages and I said, hot diggity, I have found the M people. They're called Mennonites. So I was back at the library. And I started looking up things about Mennonites and reading and this and that and whatnot. And in fact, what I have just read to you, which comes from Why I Do Not Cease Teaching and Writing, was written by Menno Simons in 1539. I never found it again. But he wrote a lot. So, and I can't say that I read everything he wrote or anything like that. So now I'm reading about Mennonites, I'm interested, but there are no Mennonites anywhere near I live. There's no churches or anything like that. And I moved to married student housing in San Francisco, and my children's father was getting a PhD. And I met a woman who had a tenderness about her that was special. She reminded me of my friend who gave me the book. More with Less. So there was something that kept saying, ask her, ask her, ask her. So I said to her, what church do you belong to? She said, oh, I'm Mennonite. Wow, like a real one standing in front of me. I said, do you mind if I touch you? She said, what's up with you, Marisabel? I said, well, you know, I've only known you a short time, and I have to tell you that I've been searching Mennonites for most of my life. She didn't understand. Why would I be searching for the people she has dinner with every night? It was really quite simple. And so she said, so if you're interested, there's a church here in San Francisco. And she said, you're welcome to come to church with me. I almost shed tears. You have no idea with the intensity that I wanted to know this subject. It mattered to me. If it mattered to me when I was in sixth grade and I carried it into my 30s and 40s, this is important, obviously. So I saw her about 2 weeks later, and she said, guess what? I got the money for the scholarship I'm leaving. And I almost get tears in my eyes. And I thought, wow, so long, and now I've lost it. And she said, well, I told the church about you, and they welcome you. There's a house here in San Francisco, and it wasn't far from my house, maybe 4 miles. She said, and you can go anytime you want. That was a big mistake. Anytime you want. If you want to encourage somebody, set a deadline, set a date, give a name, okay? So I said, oh, thank you very much, and I was so excited. I'm going to go hang out with Mennonites now. And I went to the San Francisco Mennonite Church every Sunday for 5 years, but I never walked inside. I stood out in front, or I passed by in my car, I parked, but I never went inside. I didn't know how I would be received. I didn't know, other than what I'd read, were these people really what I just read to you a few minutes ago? Were they really that? Why is it that I didn't know about them on the street, in my daily life? 5 years. So my children's father finished his PhD and we moved to Oregon. At this point, I had my book, my More with Less. The only thing that I could do with my More with Less book was to memorize the recipes, the names of the people who submitted the recipes. And I thought, if I find one of these Schwarzengrubers one of these days, I'll know who I'm dealing with. So I actually knew the names of the people who, I have a good memory, by the way. And so there you go. I knew all these, and I could tell you probably even now that the chili recipe was submitted by so-and-so, and it's on page 102. That's how well I studied this subject matter. So when I moved to Oregon, I had one main goal, and that was to have geese. So the children's dad said, you know, you come up with the weirdest things. What are the geese thing? I said, I don't know. I feel called to have geese. So he said, this is some religious thing? You're so crazy. So I said, I have to have geese. So I started looking for geese, and it was the wrong season to buy geese and this and that. And I thought, I'll go to the source. I'll call OSU. So I did, and the man started talking to me. He said, you don't want geese, ma'am, because they make a lot of noise and they're very dirty. I said, no, sir, you have no understanding. I have to have these geese. It's important to me. And he said, you sound very religious about this. And I said, perhaps it is, but it's important. I have to find these geese. And he said, okay, well, it's the wrong season, but he said, I can recommend that you see somebody named Dave Holderine. So I said, oh, I read his book. So that's how you pronounce that word? Holderine. He said, yes. And I said, okay, but they print in a place called Philo Math. I'm not sure where Philo Math is. This guy wanted me to get off the phone. So he said, well, it's called Philomath. I said, it's not spelt that way, sir. He said, yeah, well, it's Philomath, and if you live in Corvallis, you can walk there. So I actually went and found Dave Holderine, and I didn't go. I called, and I said, I have to buy some geese. And he said, excellent. He said, but this is the wrong season. However, I can see your enthusiasm for the subject matter, and I will hold some geese for you next year. And I said, next year, so one doesn't know how long one will live. He said, well, there's an urgency here. So he said, okay, call me next week, and I'll see what I can do for you. And in fact, I called, and he had set aside to a pair, and I was to go pick them up. And I remember it was raining. I'll never forget that day. And it was raining, so his wife, Millie Holderite, said to me, why don't you come inside? I had to write a check for these birds. And I walked in with the children's dad, And I don't know where the name Holdery comes from, quite frankly. So that wasn't one of the recipes, you see. So there's a lack of knowledge now. And so I'm about to write the check, and I have to lean on a counter, and I look over, and it's a woman with head coverings. So, I mean, I knew the head covering thing now. I'd read enough about it. And so I said, "Is that woman Mennonite?" And the children's dad actually kicked me and said, "We don't do those things in this country. It's bad manners." I said, "If she's really Mennonite, trust me, she wants to be known as such. Whatever." And she said, "Yes." She said, "Are you a believer?" And I said, "I'm a believer, but I'm not a Mennonite. And so there must be a church here or something." I hadn't read about the population of Mennonites in Albany. I hadn't gotten there yet, so I didn't know where I was in the world. And so she said, "We actually have a home church. And if you'd like to come, because we have a break now in the readings that we're doing, if you'd like to come, you're welcome to come." So I said, "Thank you very much." And I got the phone number and I got all the information I needed and whatnot. And we walked out to the car and my children's dad said, "I am not coming to a Mennonite church." Because actually he was an atheist. And I said, "Well, nobody's forcing you to. But trust me, I've been looking for these people, these M people, and I have found them and I'm coming." And so we attended for 4 years. And I was so happy to be among Mennonites. It was great. At the same time, because I'm hanging out with Mennonites, the children's dad now decides that he'll be Catholic again. Because a good thing is a good thing, you see. A good thing is a good thing. So now we're going to church, and the children go to church, and everything's good, and I'm happy, and we attend the home church, and we do this for 4 years. And then we move to St. Louis, Missouri. Prior to this move, I attended a funeral at the Albany Mennonite Church, and I met Ed Springer, your father. And the service was on a Saturday or something, and he was having dinner at my house on Wednesday. And so we became friends. And we often went to the Albany Mennonite Church, but when I moved to St. Louis, I found that soon after, Ed Springer moved to St. Louis. Hot diggity. Things are shaping up here. So we then started to attend the Mennonite Church. Now, the children's father is a Knight of Malta. I'm not the children's father, the children's grandfather is a Knight of Malta. And that's the highest position you could have in the Catholic Church and not be a priest. So he's a devout Catholic. And I didn't want any unhappiness in my house with their grandparents. So I sent my children in St. Louis to the Catholic school. Every day of their lives, they attended Mass. On Saturday, we went to the vigil, and I was free on Sunday. And so we went to the Mennonite Church. My children said, "Do you realize, Mother, that we're in some religious something or other every day of the week?" And I said, "Don't be absurd. You so exaggerate." He said, "Well, 5 days we go to Mass. Saturday we go to Mass. And Sunday we go with the Mennonites. So, like, what day don't we do something?" I said, "Wow, that's a bit, isn't it?" "Well, it's not changing." So life went on. Unfortunately, the marriage ended in St. Louis. And as life would have it, I went back to school and did a bunch of stuff. And I was now a midwife. And I started working for Johns Hopkins University. And they sent me out. And they said, you will be sent out about 20 to 30% of the time you will travel." That was good. My children were now, the youngest child was in his senior year of high school. Everybody else was an adult now. And I said, okay, 20%. That was a lie because I was gone about 90% of the time. But that was all right because I was sent to marvelous places. My job was to go to the places in the world with the highest maternal mortality rates and infant mortality rates. When I went to Afghanistan, and I was there for 2 years, and during that time I only came home every 6 months for about a week or two. When I went to Afghanistan, Afghanistan had a maternal mortality rate the highest in the world. In the United States, for every 100,000 women who gave birth, 7 women died for one thing or another, some unexpected complication, something no one ever detected. In Afghanistan, for every 100,000 women who gave birth, 6,000 died. So you compare the number 6,000 to 7. And the rate for infant mortality was just as bad. So I went there, I worked there for 2 years, and I learned to speak a bit of Dari, but I was very open to the experience, and so I participated in many things. One of the most beautiful things was that I, for the first time in my life, heard the call to prayer, and I was very impressed by it. And after I heard, and I remember saying, my goodness gracious, the call to prayer. And this person said, yeah, it happens 5 times a day. Oh, I just thought that was so beautiful. The sound of it is just gorgeous, actually. And after a while, they said, you'll get used to it and it'll be nothing. Well, I didn't get used to it. I paid attention. And then I realized that the call to prayer reminds man that, or, and I don't mean not women, but reminds mankind of their relationship to God. I like this. 5 times a day. So 5 times a day I prayed. Hot diggity. So this was good stuff. I promised myself that when I came back to the United States, I would pay more attention to my religious beliefs, that I would be more participatory, that I would work in my church, whatever church that would be. And so I came back to the United States, and it was very strange to come back, actually, because I was stunned by the wealth in which the average American person lives in. I remember entering Fred Meyer's and just weeping. And my son said, are you not well? What do you need? And I said, there might be more food here in this store than in the entire city of Kabul. I recently started reading a book about Eskimos, and the Eskimos call us, the people who live down here, south of Alaska, the have-to-have-everything people. The have-to-have-everything people. I felt that way when I came home. There was a need to just have stuff. And now we have pathology about decluttering our existence. God in heaven, you're getting that little card ready to tell me I'm almost up. Okay. Okay, we're shortening this thing. Okay. So one of the things that happened to me was that I was asked, you know, now that you're in our church, whatever Mennonite church I was in, could you help us out with issues of diversity? You know, can you help us out? What would you do? I said, well, you know, you can invite people to have a Cinco de Mayo here and have their children come and celebrate it or something. Although Cinco de Mayo in Mexico is not such a big deal. And then somebody said, but what if somebody drinks a beer in the parking lot? Mexicans do those things. So the whole idea was canceled. The whole idea was canceled. Okay. Some time ago, my father was a great enthusiast for music, and so I grew up with great music, lucky me. And a young person played music in my church. And I was so moved by it. It was so well done for someone so young that I clapped and I said, bravo. I received a reprimand for that. I was informed about the proper way to act in church. And I was told that, you know, I was asked, please don't be offended. I said, I'm not offended. Why would I be offended? It's not my church, you see. The church belongs to you because you're Mennonite. I'm not an ethnic Mennonite. I wasn't born a Mennonite. I joined you because I believed in what you believe. But I don't own the church. You do. That's an ugly thing to say, isn't it? But that's how I felt, you see. That's how I felt. I was not too long ago asked to talk about diversity in a church. And I was asked to discuss those things that made it difficult for me when I came to the United States. I said, I cannot tell you that because I was so young when I came here. I just joined the gang here. They said, well, could you talk about how you have difficulty showing up on time for things? Can you talk about this and that? I said, wow, if you really want to know about things that made life difficult for me, I'll discuss racism and discrimination. I have suffered that. My father's black, my mother's white. I never thought myself as anything but my father's child. I didn't think myself a nigger, a colored person, and I've been called all those things in my life. When you get an official reprimand for clapping in church, guess what you are? The nigger in church. When somebody doesn't talk to you about what you did or why you did it, that's who you are. So you don't want to hear this stuff. But guess what? I suffer thinking that the Mennonite church is dying because I go to a church that's full of white hair. We don't have many families. The world is changing. I was going to tell you a bunch of statistics, which you could easily obtain by going online and looking at the government census. The world is changing. Why did I come to the Mennonites? Because I thought they were good people. I'm not sure, while I can be quite scholarly on my subjects, that I read with intensity all the doctrine of being a Mennonite. They were good people. And guess what most of the people in the world want? They want to be with good people. They want to serve. They want to be part of what's happening. So when I was investigating what to say here and how to go about doing that, you know, I got all statistics. The Mennonite church is more not ethnic Mennonite than it is ethnic Mennonite. Open your eyes. No official reprimands for somebody who came from Africa and might clap. So when I was doing all this stuff, there came up something. I have a note here somewhere about people who argue whether Mennonites are an ethnic group or a religious group. Or are they a religious ethnic group or an ethnic religious group? So what do you want to be? What do we want to be? Want to go on? I remember my brother saying to me, so he said, I understand that you're like a Mennonite now. This is another brother, my oldest brother. And I said, well, yeah, I have been baptized as a Mennonite. He said, so tell me about them. What I know about the Mennonites, he said, is that they are the first to come when there's problems. Tell me what you know about them. I said, I don't know that much. He said, oh, come on. So then I said, well, the Mennonites, and I said, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. He said, wow, very good. So he got up, and he had an incredible collection of books, and he reached for a book, and he said, here, Mennonites. Huh, guess what it says? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. He said, did you memorize this? I said, no, but I mean, if you're Mennonite, you would know that. He said, very good. You realize that we have like even saints in our family, and you were going to be a nun once. I was going to be a nun. And I said, yeah. He said, good choice. Good choice. I'm glad. And that was the end of that. So, going back to the subject of Mennonites, and I don't know, are you the group I should be telling this to? There aren't that many Mennonites in the United States to begin with. You're a chunk of them. So, I'm telling you, we have to invite people to come. I went to a faculty retreat once in which the person who was the keynote speaker said, how many of you know five people of different ethnic backgrounds? different races, different anything, any five different people. And I was like, but that wasn't common in that room. And he said, I'll tell you why we're entering a post-Christian era. Because you don't talk to the person who puts petrol in your car. You don't talk to the person that helps you get your lemons at the store. If you don't relate to people, guess what? What happens? They don't come to your church. You know why I came? I told you, didn't I? I picked up a book. That's not the way that most people do these things. I picked up a book, but more importantly, this woman who had a tenderness about her said, come on over, come to our church. And Dave Holderreed, who became one, my children called him aunt and uncle, Dave and Millie. I wanted to be like them. I didn't want to be white. I wanted to be like these good people who do good things, who reach out and, good grief, follow this. So what I have to say is, Pope Francis is gaining on you. I'm not kidding. People are going back to the church because it makes sense now. This that you have lived all your lives is now hot stuff. So, I think the question is that you should question your situation. Are you welcoming people? Do you have a welcome day? Do you have? I mean, I could sit down and say, you know, what kinds of things could we do? I'm sure that everybody has ideas. But they're important ideas. Because Mennonites can't perish from the earth. They weren't called to disappear over time. And More with Less did it for me, but it's not going to do it for everybody. They changed the book, by the way. So, did you show me the 5-minute thing already? I didn't look. Therefore, it does not apply.
We can make it apply.
I believe that we should not fear, but open the doors. My son said to me, Mother, you think you're not prejudiced. But you are. Ooh, that hurt. So who am I prejudiced by? I'm actually a Jew, because if your mother's a Jew, you're a Jew. I'm black. I'm Caucasian. I've lived in Islamic countries. By the way, here's the topper. My mother was raised as a Catholic, but she was entirely of Sephardic Jewish background. My mother wouldn't eat pork. She wouldn't do lots of things. The Sephardic Jews lived hiding their Jewishness in a Catholic world, right? My mother then converted to Islam, and she was a Muslim before she died. In our house, we respected everything. So, I'm going to end by telling you to open the doors and not be afraid. To be uncomfortable is good. It allows you to learn. Rumi said, this being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. The discomfort is a guide from beyond. My son said to me, Mother, you don't like people that smell funny and live on the street and have funny looking hair? He was right. But I've changed. I'm a bit more accepting about the world I don't know, didn't know. I try to know. And my son said to me, what this woman here, Wendy Ho is her name, what she does, he said, do it, Mother. Everybody that you meet, say, hello, how are you? And smile. Give them a hug. Open your heart. So what I was going to say about all this that I've been doing, experience needs distance, and what you write of a distance tells not so much what you were like as what you have discovered since. So I'm really talking to you about my experience, not what I had been as a child or anything like that. In all my classes, what I was teaching, I have always said and given to my students a quote by David Wade that said, other cultures are not failed forms of being you. Other cultures are not failed forms of being you. And finally, yesterday, this is also a Rumi quote, yesterday I was clever, so I wanted to change the world. Today I am wise, so I want to change myself. Thank you so much for listening to me. You're very kind.
Thank you, Marissa Bell. Obviously, we've just touched the tip of the iceberg, but thank you very, very much for challenging us, for telling us some of your story, and for opening our eyes yet again.